Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, world. Welcome once again to Tuesday Talk with Key West Lou. I am your host, Louis Patron. Another crazy week behind us. Sometimes this craziness is good. It's not all bad. One of the good points this week is we have the Pope here in the United States tonight, and we had him in Cuba the last few days. That is a good, but there's a lot of bad things happening out there. Also, some very scary things. I want to start with a couple of our friends over in the Middle East, and I say our friends with quotes. I'm going to speak briefly about Afghanistan and then Saudi Arabia. It just came out in the last couple of days. Afghanistan, the military commanders, each village has a police commander. He is an Afghan. He has been there for a long period of time, generally. Most of the police commanders, one for each village, live and operate out of a United States base. Their rooms, their bedrooms are on the United States base. And what happened this past week, or what came to our attention this past week, is that these captains are screwing around with little boys. It's called Baka Baggy. That means boy play, grown men and young boys, and the police commanders are chaining a young boy to their bed and then in the evening having sex with them. The sex may not be too popular with most of the young boys. They have been known to scream. Our soldiers who are at the same base can hear these screams in the evening. They have been told by their superiors not to pay attention. This is a custom in Afghanistan. It's been going on for centuries, and the police commander is entitled to have that young boy slave. Well, it just so happened about a month ago, two of our men in our armed forces, a lieutenant and a sergeant, heard the noise, couldn't put up with it anymore, went in the room and beat the shit out of the police commander, okay? And, of course, the police commander turned them in because our boys are not supposed to do that to Afghan police commanders. Already the officer is out. He was a captain, I'm sorry. He's out of the military. He left voluntarily. And the sergeant is being involuntarily removed from the service as of October 1st. These are our friends, the Afghans. We are fighting to help them. We have lost many American lives there. We spent tons of money, wasted on equipment and everything else. And this is what they do. Why are we there? I continue asking the question, why are we in Afghanistan? We don't belong there. We are never going to change the minds of these people. They do today what they did 3,000 years ago. They do today what they did before the birth of Christ, okay? And they're never going to change. The same people hate each other over there. They fight over the same land. And everything they do is from the old days, centuries ago. Sex slaves, boy slaves, to big shots in the villages. It has been commonplace and continues to be commonplace, and we cover this up. Now I'm going to go to our real good friends in Saudi Arabia. I love the Saudi Arabians. They gave us $4 gas. Isn't that terrific? And 17 of the 19 or 21 Arabs that operated those planes into the Twin Towers on 9/11 were Saudi Arabia citizens. Yeah, 17 of them. Now, it has been thought consistently since 9/11 that Saudi Arabia financed the 9/11 situation. These are our friends, by the way. And that they were covering the whole thing up. And it's also thought that our government continues to this day to cover it up. There was a study made, an investigation, and as to the cause of 9/11. 38 of those pages talk about Arab-Saudi Arabian participation. The whole report has been made public except for those 38 pages, and our government refuses to provide those 38 pages. Having said that, let me tell you now that the Saudi Arabia recently was elected to the chair of the United Nations Human Rights Panel. Terrific. The chair of the United Nations Human Rights Panel. This is a Saudi Arabia that, you know, what they do, on occasion, actually, they're celebrating, by the way, the Saudi Arabians right now, because they have this great position in the UN. They're recognized as being, as supporting human rights, decency of people, take care of people. Well, I'll tell you, they're not. They shouldn't really celebrate, because they still crucify, and they still chop off people's heads, and they still kill women that they shouldn't kill. What's happened recently involves a teenager. He is, in the next few days, he is going to be beheaded. Beheaded. He's 20 years old now. If he committed a crime, it was committed at 17, 3 years ago. He is going to be beheaded, and then his body is going to be crucified. They're going to hang his body on a cross for 3 days without his head. The boy's name is El Nimer. He's now 20, as I said. Whatever he did wrong, he did in 2012. The charges were illegal protesting against the government and gun possession. There was no proof of either given at the trial. Of course, they have great trials over there, and they have a great appellate process. He was not permitted a lawyer, okay? He was tortured for his confession. It's claimed he's tortured for his confession. There is an appellate process. It is closed. No attorney represented him before the appellate courts. He was not permitted to be present before the appellate courts, and the appeals were conducted without his knowledge. Now he's lost the appeals, and the government of Saudi Arabia says he will now be confronted with an Islamic execution, which sometimes they refer to, believe it or not, as a biblical execution. And this is what they're going to have. They're going to chop his head off and then hang him on a cross for 3 days. He was convicted, note, as a juvenile, 17. He's now 20, and he's set to be executed. Would never happen here in this country, only if he was tried as an adult. If he were not, they're not going to execute him. This is garbage, my friends. This is a country that also, Saudi Arabia, let me tell you something. We're fighting in Afghanistan. We're fighting in Syria. We're still fighting in Iraq. And in each of those places, Saudi Arabia is in there offering their airplanes now and fighting on the side of the people we're not supporting. They're fighting against the people we are supporting by providing air cover, by providing equipment and money. We're fighting each other over there through third parties, and they're supposed to be our friends, Saudi Arabia. Okay, now something interesting occurred this week, something I didn't know about. Perhaps you do. I never was aware of this, and it continues to amaze me as I get older, and I am old. As you know, I'm 80 years old. The things I learned that I didn't know. I'm going to talk about a doomsday seed vault, S-E-E-D, a doomsday seed vault. And here's what this is all about. We're going to go to Norway. It's called the Svalbard, S-V-A-L-B-A-R-D, Svalbard Global Seed Vault. It's a huge refrigerator. I'm talking like a huge building. It's on a Norwegian island called Spitsbergen. It's in the Arctic, in the Arctic Svalbard Archipelago, 800 miles, 810 miles to be exact, from the North Pole. This building is built inside a sandstone mountain. And what do they keep in there? Seeds. They preserve seeds. Crop seeds, beans, rice, wheat, peas, you got it? That's what they saved there. And the purpose is, and this, by the way, it's cold up there because it's Arctic, and it also they have this place refrigerated. They keep these seeds because they feel a time may come, a crisis may occur, where regionally or globally we're not going to have enough food. And we're going to need seeds to replenish our supply of food, and that's where the seeds will come from. Financing this operation as one of the primary supporters economically is the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Right now, in this Svalbard Global Seed Vault, there are 840,000 seed samples, an impressive number, 840,000 seed samples from 400,000 different species of seeds. Now you have, besides this place I'm telling you about on this Norwegian island, they're called gene banks also. There are other gene banks around the world. I didn't know this at all. It's a worldwide thing where seeds are stored. The the Syrian war has created a problem. This Svalbard Global Seed Vault was constructed in 2008, okay? This is the first time they are taking seeds out of it. They are removing the seeds. And that's because of the Syrian war. There is a Syrian city called Aleppo, A-L-E-P-P-O, Aleppo. They have no crops anymore. They're totally wasted, totally gone because of the war. They need seeds in order to grow food again so they don't starve. And they're tapping this vault, this gene bank on this Norwegian island, first time ever since 2008. Let me tell you something else about this that's interesting. They have this artificial, they have this refrigeration system to keep the stuff cold and frozen. If the refrigeration system falls off, it breaks and it can't be fixed. It's claimed that the cold weather in the Arctic will keep these seeds in A-OK shape for 200 years. I want to talk about the drug industry. I want to talk about generic drugs. You know what generic drugs are? That's what we get after the patent runs out. Patents are 15, 17 years old. A drug company invents a new drug. It's going to beat this terrible disease. And because they put all the money into it, et cetera, to discover, invent this particular drug, they're given a period of time that they can sell this drug, and they get a good dollar for it, a big dollar. But once their patent time runs out, then anyone can make that drug and sell it. Normally, you buy it very cheaply. Those of you who are senior citizens and have to purchase a lot of drugs are aware that generic drugs are considerably cheaper, okay, considerably cheaper than buying a drug that has not as yet run out on its patent. Well, here's what's happening right now, and this is terrible, what I'm going to tell you. Their generic drugs, their prices are rising dramatically. There is a $13.50 tablet, okay, that overnight, $13.50 it cost generically, overnight has gone to $750 per tablet, $13.50 to $750. The pill is called Durapren. It's 62 years old, this drug, this pill, 62 years old, and it's used to treat two things, basically, life-threatening parasitic infections, and it also helps in the cure, or not the cure, but maintaining a body who has AIDS. It's involved with assisting the anti-immune system situation. Now, that's a big jump from $13.50 to $750 overnight. It is anticipated, it is projected, that if someone has to purchase that pill for $750 every night, it's going to cost them $63,000 a year for that one pill. People can't afford that kind of money. Insurance companies probably won't pay that kind of money. The other thing is, I don't know how they put prices on drugs, but this drug also, in certain situations, can sell for $634.19, not 63. It can go up as far as $634.19 per pill. That's a 5,000% increase. Now, how did this come about? Well, the company that had been making this drug for 62 years sold the company in August to a new company called Turing Pharmaceuticals. And Turing Pharmaceuticals is run by a former hedge fund manager. His name is Martin Shkreli. Martin Shkreli. He says, and I quote, "It was a smart business decision to raise the price." He's a kid. He's not even 30 years old. I watched him on TV today. Very porky. He says, "I bought the company. I have the right to the pill. I can charge anything I want." And he is. And he's not going to lower the price, okay? Would you believe this? Now, and he didn't do anything new to the drug, and he says, "This is going to help my business. I'm using this to become a big guy in the drug industry. They should take this, what he's done, and make him a big guy in a jail somewhere." Anyhow, there's another drug. This is becoming commonplace, what they're doing, because these new companies are buying old, neglected drugs mostly generics, okay? And instead of calling them generics, they have a new label now. They're specialty drugs, specialty drugs. And with the name specialty drugs, they feel they're entitled to charge more. There's a drug called cyloserine, C-Y-L-O-S-E-R-I-N-E. It treats multi-drug-resistant tuberculosis. Now, we don't get much TB in this country, but around the world they do. The company was bought by an upstart company called Rodelin Therapeutics, okay? A 30-pill supply under the old company cost $500, still a lot of money. But that was the generic price, 30-pill supply, $500. Overnight, it went from $500 to $10,800 for a 30-day supply. There's another one out there called Doxycycline, D-O-X-Y-C-Y-C-L-I-N-E. It's an antibiotic. $20 a bottle when it was generic. Somebody bought the company. They now charge $1,849 a bottle. This has all happened, folks, in the last 2 months. These people get away with it, and they're currently going to get away with it. It's going to keep happening. And all of a sudden, you know, a lot of people, they may have insurance, they may not have insurance, do without all the drugs they need every month because they cannot afford them. It becomes a choice between food, rent, or the drugs. And the drugs are the first thing to take the beating. This is not the way these things should be run. The government should get their nose into this business. Obama gave the drug industry a free ride when he went for Obamacare. He wanted to keep the drug companies, the pharmaceutical companies on his side, and he did. Well, they're out of hand. It's a new day. It's time to go after these people. All right. I write a column, as you know, every week for Conk Life, and the new column comes out tomorrow. It's published Wednesday evening every week. And the title of my column this week is an interesting column, by the way. It's a little bit different. And I titled it, United States War Ready. In effect, is the United States ready for war? And the reason I was motivated to do this is because the government or somebody announced last week before I wrote the column that by the end of this year, our military forces on the ground, I'm not talking about in airplanes or on ships, but the guys in the foxholes, the soldiers, the boots on the ground, are going to be down to 420,000. 420,000. Now, that happens to be the smallest number of soldiers, personnel on the ground that we have had since World War II, the end of World War II. Now, that doesn't sound right to me because there's trouble all over the world. I don't have to tell you the Middle East, North Africa. It's growing up in Asia. There, right now, we have four problem areas, the South and East China Seas, the Ukraine, the Middle East, and the Arctic Sea. All right. Look first at what we've got in this country. We are behind in the construction of new ships and sophisticated equipment, to, missiles and so forth, to go with those ships. All right? We have not been allocating the money out of Congress to build new ships on a sufficient basis for years in this country. We have cut the budget, cut. They've done this in Washington. The people we elect to protect us and represent us. And in the meantime, and I'm going to tell you who we got to be afraid of here. Not ISIS. ISIS will be taken care of at some point. China and Russia. Because ISIS may come and go as Al-Qaeda did. But China and Russia will remain. Now, China, they have over a million more soldiers on the ground than the United States does. Makes sense, big country. But they got more soldiers. Right now, they have 300 ships, all new. 5 years ago, their Navy was about 20 vessels. Today, it's 305 years, and they continue to build them. They're building them big time. We have 430 ships, but not all our ships are new. And many of them are in dry dock. They're in reserve. In case we ever need them, we can take these old ships, these old vessels out of dry dock, give them a bath, and put them into service against very updated vessels such as China has. China's also doing this because they're interested in, they want to be like the U.S. has been. They want to be the power in the world, and they want a lot of other things. They are building islands in the South and East China Seas. I am telling you, they're building islands. They are building islands where no land exists, where no island was there before. They're probably doing it like when you put those rigs in the ocean to take oil out. They are actually building small islands. And the only thing they're putting on these islands, and this is all they need, are airfields and a place for their personnel to sleep. But they've got tons now, lots of these little islands built, and they continue to build them because they want to expand their abilities to pursue and do whatever they have to do in the South and East China Seas, which, by the way, are a hell of a lot larger than between here and Europe with the Atlantic Ocean. So you can see visually what I'm talking about. These are big waters. Now, also, they are building missiles. They, right now, have missiles better than anything we have, can go farther carrying nuclear warheads, better than anything we have. And this is the problem, we have no anti-missile defense to compete with these new missiles that the Chinese are using that are on their airships, on their carriers, on their submarines. We have nothing to stop them with. We have not developed how to stop those missiles yet because we haven't put money into the thing. Now let's talk about Russia because they say China and Russia are going to be our problem. We know what they're doing in the Ukraine. We know what they're doing in the Middle East. Now keep in mind, never forget, that Russia and China in the last several years have become asshole buddies. Here we impose all these sanctions on Russia in the last couple of years because of what they did in the Ukraine, thinking we're going to put them out of business. Gas and oil are the biggest money producer for Russians, 75% of their income, and we're going to put them out of business. And we're screwing the hell out of them. We're tightening the screw. They're still in trouble over there. What does Putin do? You got to admire the guy. He made three new oil deals with China and two new railroad deals, okay? And he's going to supply China with oil. He's going to develop the oil that China already has. So he's coming out of this okay, and they're hand in hand now. We have pushed Russia and China in bed together. Russia does not have a great naval force. Oh, I've got to tell you that up front. Their navy is called geriatric. It's referred to as a geriatric navy. Their vessels are so old they go back to World War II, and that's what they're using. The only thing they're big in is submarines. They have 90 submarines, which apparently are in very good shape. But overall, it's an aged navy, and it's geriatric, okay? But they're not going to have to worry if there's a war because there's going to be China on their side. It's got all the new vessels. This is a bad situation. There's something else I wanted to tell you about Russia. It escapes me here for a moment. Well, let me move on to the Arctic Sea here. Oh, I want to say this about China. Excuse me. I get a block every now and then. The Chinese hate the Japanese. They still remember how the Japanese treated them in World War II, and they did treat them very poorly. The Japanese treated our people very poorly. They treated everyone poorly. And so they hate them, and they want to get even with them. The problem is Japan claims all of these islands and these waterways in the South and East China Seas that China is. Japan claims them. And technically they belong to Japan by treaty and historically. But Japan is flexing its muscle. Because we know Japan doesn't have anything. They don't really have an air force. They don't have a navy or anything else. We protect them, and they're flexing their muscle, and they say, these belong to us. We don't care what you say. And they're in there. They've taken these areas over. The problem is we have a series of treaties with Japan because they never became militarized again after World War II by their own choice. The Japs didn't want to do it. They never wanted to get into the situation that World War II brought them. But these treaties all require the United States to defend Japan in case of attack or invasion. So if the Japanese and the Chinese getting to a pissing match, we're in the middle of it, which then it brings on World War III. Don't say these things can't happen. These things do happen. This is the problem in life. Now, there's one thing about the Russians that's interesting. The Arctic Sea. The Arctic Sea, the North Pole, has always been an area that belongs to everybody. Nobody owns it. Well, in the last 6 months, Russia has announced that 500,000 square miles of the Arctic Sea are theirs. They don't say why it's theirs. They just said these are ours. And there's a reason why they want these. It's a very large area, obviously. There's a lot of gas and oil under the Arctic Sea, under those waters. And they want the gas and water, the gas and oil out of there. The other thing is Russia knows there's global warming. There is climate change. And they know that as the ice melts, as the icebergs melt, new shipping lanes are going to be opened up. Just like that, we're going to have new shipping lanes. They want control of the new shipping lanes, and they want the gas and oil. So they're up there, and they tell the whole world, including the United States, this is ours, no more for you. What are we going to do? We say it's wrong, but what can we do? Right now, China has 40 icebreakers in the Arctic area, in the Arctic Sea. We have two, because we only have two. I want to talk about the Pope quickly here. He's in town. You know, he was in Cuba. Man of God, et cetera, et cetera. Some Republicans don't like him. They're being very critical of the Pope. They don't like positions he takes on climate change. He says there is on unequal pay. He says there is inequality in pay. And on gun manufacturers, they should be reined in, he says. And they speak poorly of the Pope. They say he's being a politician and not a man of God. Well, I say he's the head of the Catholic Church, you know, and he's a big shot. He's a big man, and I think the largest religious group in this country may be Catholics, first or second. But they are not showing him the respect he's entitled to. He speaks before a joint session of Congress tomorrow. Some Republicans have already said they're not going to show up. I hope that none of them stand up and embarrass our country by calling him a name, as happened with some of our presidents when they give State of the Union addresses. I want to point out, the Pope deals with human problems and social problems. The Republicans ignore these problems or work against them. Keep this in mind. If Pope Francis can meet with Fidel Castro and Raul Castro, as he did yesterday, all Republicans in Congress can meet, entertain, and listen to Pope Francis. All right, the guys with people that didn't talk to a Catholic Pope for over 50 years, they welcomed him. Fidel and Raul welcomed him. He was in Fidel's house yesterday. And if he can do that, the Republicans should be able to meet with him. A poll was recently taken, and they wanted to know, do you think our government is corrupt, the government of the United States? Would you believe? This poll recently was 2014. Guess what the answer was? 75% of American citizens said they believe their government is corrupt. 75%. And that figure has been steady since 2010. 73, 72, 74, 75%. Makes sense because of the way these people conduct themselves. Very quickly, Syracuse University, we play football again. We won our first three games. We may lose the fourth one this Wednesday. We play LSU, who's ranked number 8. We are unranked. LSU's a 24-point favorite. And we've already lost due to injury our first quarterback, our second quarterback, and either our third or fourth string quarterback is going to start this Saturday. But it should be a good game. I'm saying this with a smile. I'm glad my team is finally winning again. All right, that's the show for this week. I hope you have enjoyed. The show is archived, as you know, and it's available right now on Blog Talk Radio and also on YouTube. And tomorrow morning, you can find it linked up to my Key West Lou website. Very easy to find it there. Key West Lou website. Everything that I do is on there. I wrote a book. If you like the show, buy my book, The World Upside Down. If you don't like the show, don't buy my book. You will not enjoy it. The book's available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. I thank you again for joining me. It has been fun. I always like to share my thoughts with you. I look forward to being with you again next week.